About a month ago, I said Happy Mother's Day and had some recommendations for mothers. And as they say, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So as I was thinking about what I would be saying today, I thought, well, I'll just kind of reverse the roles and say pretty much the same thing I said about women and mothers. I'll say the same thing pretty much about fathers and prospective fathers. Well, just like many modern women, men are delaying parenthood much later than previous generations. Men today, on average, become fathers when they're 30 years old. And that's several years older than what used to be common in previous generations. Over the last several decades, both men and women have been steadily postponing parenthood. Now, there might be several reasons for that. Why are they postponing fatherhood? Well, some want to get their careers, their jobs on track. They want to have enough money to support a wife and a child. That makes pretty good sense. Others want to sow their wild oats and enjoy life and, you know, have fun and get out there and do things before they get married and settle down. Others simply find it hard to find a good wife. You know, it's hard to find a good man. It's hard to find a good woman. Some people are looking for a good woman, and they just can't find one. Others don't want to make the commitments necessary. They're afraid of the responsibilities of parenthood or being married. Some people, they want to continue in their sort of adolescent state. They might be in their late 20s, early 30s, and they're still acting like teenagers. And they want to continue doing that. And so they're not ready to become fathers. In fact, some people are really not cut out to be fathers. So there's a number of reasons why people either are avoiding fatherhood or are postponing it. I read that about one quarter of all men are not fathers by the age of 44. That means that 75%, three quarters, are fathers by the time they get to 44. But apparently that's an all-time high for that statistic. That is 25%, one quarter of all men today do not become fathers yet by the age of 44. Many men are far more focused on career and on personal pleasure and self-satisfaction than they are on, you know, getting married and starting a family. I said a few weeks ago that Christians cannot simply imitate what is common in the culture. Our culture is going downhill. Our culture has become less moral, less Christian, and more pagan all the time. And so the fact that we see certain statistics, or that we see certain things happening in our culture today, does not mean that Christians ought to just do the same. Oftentimes we have to do differently. In fact, sometimes we ought to do the opposite of what our culture is doing. Christians today truly have to be countercultural. We have to be different from the surrounding society. And so we should follow the biblical pattern, not just the pattern of what we see in society. Well, today, of course, is Father's Day. We want to celebrate those men who are committed to the biblical pattern for fathers. And so I'd like to make several recommendations regarding fatherhood. Some of these are recommendations for prospective fathers. We have several in our audience today, some quite young, but others who potentially could be fathers quite soon. And then there are, of course, other people who are fathers and grandfathers. And so these recommendations are primarily for the men and the boys who are here, who could potentially in the next few years become fathers, or those who are already fathers and grandfathers. And I think all these are certainly biblical, Christian, and reasonable recommendations regarding fatherhood. First of all, assume that you're going to be a father. Now, again, I'm obviously targeting that remark toward those who are not yet fathers, but who could be within the next 5 or 10 years. All things being equal, most men become fathers. 60%, I'm told, of adult men will be fathers at some point in their life. Only 25% of men don't become fathers. So 3/4 of all men, at least here in America, become fathers. The majority, the vast majority, will become fathers at some point. So why should Christian men in particular think about fatherhood and assume that you will be a father? Well, the normal pattern that we find in the Bible is that men get married and become fathers. Now, of course, we know that for some men that doesn't work out that way. I was worried that it wouldn't work out that way for me. When I got to be about 40 years old and didn't have a woman, I was thinking, well, maybe I won't find one. But lo and behold, the Lord provided one for me. So for some men, it doesn't work out. They're lifelong bachelors. But for most people, they do find a wife at some point, and that seems to follow the biblical pattern. For example, Genesis 2:24, a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. That's what typically happens to men. A man shall do that, leave and cleave. That's the same pattern that Jesus endorsed when he quoted that same passage in Matthew 19:5. Ephesians 6:4 says, "You fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." So the assumption is that men, generally speaking, especially in that Jewish culture of that time, ancient times and in the times of Jesus, Jewish men typically, Christian men, would typically get married and have children. So that's the typical assumption, that men get married and produce children. They leave, they cleave, and they conceive. That's one I came up with myself. Leave and cleave is biblical, but that conceive thing, that's, I put that in there myself. And so that's the normal pattern that most Christian, I think most Christian men, that's what they want. I mean, that's a Christian, godly man ought to be seeking to get married and have a family. Some men don't get married because they don't want to. Some men want to remain single. There are certain people that I'm glad they didn't get married. I have a particular guy in my mind right now, not from here. But I'm glad that he didn't get married. There's no way that he would be a good father or a good husband. So some men are cut out for it. Some men aren't. But most men will at some point become fathers. The Bible uniformly praises having children. It's good to have children. It's good, in fact, to have many children from the biblical point of view. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them, from Psalm 127. So unless they fit into the minority of cases, most of the young men here, as you're sitting here in the audience, most of the young men here will get married and their wives will have children. You should assume that that's going to happen to you, because in the majority of cases, it does happen. Now, it might not, but it probably will, or it certainly could. And so you need to prepare yourself for that eventuality. Some men, some boys might be thinking, well, I would never want to get married. But if the right girl came along, I assure you that you would be interested in it. So normally speaking, young Christian men will get married. And young Christian men also should intentionally avoid the self-centered, self-indulgent, immature attitude that is so common among men, young men, especially in our culture. Many young men today avoid fatherhood or even marriage because they are commitment averse. They're immature. They would rather please themselves. They would rather enjoy their video games and their recreation than they would to actually find a woman and settle down and get married. Well, that's not how a Christian man thinks. A Christian man thinks of following the biblical guidelines and the biblical pattern. And so Christian men ought to be interested in fatherhood and marriage, marriage and fatherhood, because that is the biblical pattern that we ought to be following. So we want to encourage our young men to assume that they will do that. Encourage young men here that as they grow up, they probably will find a good woman and they'll get married and have children. So since that's the case, the next recommendation then is to prepare for fatherhood. Prepare for that eventuality. Prepare for those circumstances. Now, of course, you should not have children until you're married. So obviously part of this process then has to be preparing for marriage. What can you do to prepare for marriage? If you have to get married first in order to have children, to become a father, well, what do you do to prepare for marriage? Well, work on yourself first. Sometimes people complain that there are no marriageable women out there. There's no good women. Well, maybe you need to prepare yourself first so that when the right girl comes along, you are ready for that. So if a godly, eligible bachelorette suddenly showed up, would she be interested in you? Is there anything about you that she would find attractive? Would she think of you as a potential option for her husband and the father of her children? That's the kind of thing that young, eligible bachelors ought to be thinking about. You're worried maybe about finding the right girl. Well, if the right girl suddenly showed up, would she be interested in you? Do you have the qualities and characteristics that a godly Christian woman would be interested in a spouse? So if you want to get married, the first step, of course, is make yourself marriageable. Some things about yourself you can't control. As I mentioned, I think before, things about like your height and some things about your appearance, certain things you just don't have any control over. But if you want to marry a good woman as a man, I'm talking to men here primarily, if you want to marry a good woman, you have to be the kind of person that a good woman would be looking for. So if a girl like that suddenly showed up, maybe you would not be ready for that. You're not in the state of mind or the state of body that would be appealing to a good woman if she showed up. Now, we know that the Bible presents the virtuous woman in Proverbs 31. So women can look at that ideal or that set of characteristics as the ideal woman. We know what that ideal woman looks like because we have her described in Proverbs 31. We don't have that same sort of description for a man. There's not the virtuous man passage. Now, there are a lot of passages that deal with men and their characteristics or what they should have, but it's not like Proverbs 31 that you can just go to that main section to look at those. So we have to glean then, go through the Bible and see what the Bible tells us about what a good man would look like. What would a man of God look like? Well, there are several characteristics, I think, of the virtuous man. The virtuous man is a man of God, first of all. He's saved. He's a Christian. I think a godly woman certainly would want to marry a godly man. And you can read that Proverbs 31 passage, and it talks about the woman's husband. The godly, virtuous woman has a godly, virtuous husband who's mentioned there. And so the man of God has a fear of God. He's reverent. He's godly. He has a high commitment to the things of God. He's also masculine. And it's not the kind of masculinity that you see in typically in Hollywood movies. It's not the, you know, typical John Wayne, tough guy, Western person necessarily. True masculinity is really, when you think of the godly man, a person who's presented really having all the characteristics, that would be Jesus. Jesus himself, really. Christ-likeness is true biblical masculinity, although obviously Jesus was never married, but still we see the qualities that would be true in a godly Christian man. We see those things in Jesus. No godly woman wants to marry an effeminate man, an irresponsible man, a lazy man, a man with no prospects. So if the perfect woman for you showed up, and she looks at you and says, that is not a guy who I would be interested in marrying because he's lazy, he's not responsible, he has no good job, he's still living in his mom's basement playing video games all day. You know, that's not what you want to be. You want to be the kind of man that if the right girl showed up, she'd be interested in you. He can provide for the family. He needs to have, obviously, enough income to pay the bills and potentially take care of the wife that he's going to marry, and if a child or two or however many come along, he needs to have the income to take care of them. It may make sense for a man to secure a good job before seeking a wife. You have to be in a position to provide for your family. He can protect the family. You know, provision and protection, those are the two main responsibilities that a man has, protect the family. He's also gentle and loving to his wife and children. 1 Peter 3:7, husbands likewise dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as unto the weaker vessel. And weaker there, I think, simply means physically weaker. The responsibility of the man to his wife is to love her, to care for her, to nurture her, protect her. Those are the kinds of things that a man has to do. And some men, they struggle with doing that. They don't have those characteristics. But you have to be gentle and loving. He's a leader as well. He leads his wife and his children, both with authority and with love. He leads the home spiritually. Many men leave the spiritual leadership to the wives, the women, the mothers. They say, well, let her take care of that side of things. But the man ought to be a spiritual leader. Joshua 24:15, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And so again, a godly woman is looking for a godly leader, somebody who's not just, you know, a bump on a log sitting around doing nothing, somebody who takes initiative and who shows leadership for the family. You want to provide a good example for the wife and the children to follow. So this is what the Proverbs 31 virtuous woman is looking for, a virtuous man. If you want to meet and marry a virtuous woman, well, then you've got to be a virtuous man. And if you lack some of these qualities, you can work on them. These are characteristics, these are personal qualities that you can develop within yourself. Work on becoming husband material. work on becoming the kind of person that a virtuous woman would find attractive. So it makes sense if you want to get married and become a father, you take the steps necessary to make yourself marriageable, make yourself attractive to a virtuous woman if she came along. Now, fortunately, I think it's true, just from my perspective, that women are typically not as interested in personal appearance as what men are. Men, as I said, I think a couple of weeks ago, men typically find beauty in a woman very attractive. They're attracted to a certain kind of a woman, or they find beauty in women attractive. Women, on the other hand, just from what I see and what I've heard, are not as interested in a man being handsome as they are in a man's personal character, his inner qualities. Women are more interested in your personality, being honest and kind and intelligent and confident, than they are in how you look. A godly woman is interested in your Christian character and virtue. So if you have inner personal qualities and inner personal strength, that's going to be appealing, especially to the virtuous woman. She's not going to be as considerate or as interested in how handsome you are. She's going to be more interested in your personal personality and your inner qualities. I saw a documentary, or part of a documentary, just the other day, and it had nothing to do with this, but it was interesting that they were interviewing various couples, and this one young couple that they were interviewing, I noticed that the woman was a beautiful blonde young lady, probably mid-30s or something, but a beautiful woman. She's married to a guy who is quite homely. He has had kind of a weird-shaped face and big ears and a receding hairline. And I'm thinking, why is this kind of ugly guy hooked up with this beautiful woman? Well, in the interview, it came across that this was a sharp guy. He was well-dressed. He presented himself well. He could speak well. Obviously, he was a sharp individual. And I could see that what attracted this woman was not his looks, because he was not a good-looking guy. As good-looking as she was, this guy was kind of the opposite. So what was the attraction? Well, this was a sharp guy. He was a smart guy. He was a well-presented guy. He was a confident guy. So to me, it became evident that it wasn't so much the looks that she was drawn to, it was his inner personal character that she was drawn to. The biblical prophet Red Green, have you heard of Red Green? He's kind of a comedian from years ago. And he used to say, if the women don't find you handsome, at least let them find you handy. So, you know, there are certain things you can do. Maybe you can't do much for your handsomeness or your appearance, but you can develop skills, you can develop character, you can develop things that a woman might find attractive. And so if the Lord brings the right woman into your life, well, you have some things about you, interpersonal qualities, that perhaps that woman might find attractive. And frankly, you know, as my wife and I have been thinking about our daughters and what their future will be, you know, we think about things like that. Who is going to be the guy who comes along and marries the guys who come along and marry our girls? Well, what kind of guys do we want? Are we concerned about their beauty or their handsomeness? We're not concerned about that at all. We're concerned about their inner personal character. And I think women of virtue want men of virtue. If you're a godly Proverbs 31 woman, you don't care all that much about what your husband looks like. You have other concerns. There are other qualities there. And so let the women find you mature and honest and kind. They say that a sense of humor is often attractive to women. And of course, women are looking for strong Christian virtues, Christian commitments. So let's say the right woman comes along. Let's say you are able to attract her to you. And then the next step, of course, is to get married. Once you found a woman, get a ring and pop the question. Before you become a father, of course, the biblical pattern is that you have to get married. The prerequisite to fatherhood is marriage. It's a sad thing today that many men don't wait for marriage to have children. Sometimes men go from woman to woman and leave children here, there, and everywhere, and that's obviously not the pattern. In fact, that's sinful. But the requirement for Christian marriage is that each person be a Christian. And I'm sure that this is the expectation anyway, but definitely want to encourage our people to marry fellow believers. The Bible says we ought not to be unequally yoked with unbelievers. And so Christian marriage requires marrying fellow Christians. So you should date and marry only fellow believers. And I believe that dating, the process of dating, really is to find a marriage partner. It's to find a spouse. Sometimes people date just whatever for the fun of it or because their friends are doing it. But especially when you get into the marriageable years, the purpose of dating, in my mind, is to find a spouse. And marriage works best when both partners have the same values, the same attitudes, the same commitments, the same standards. In other words, it's best to marry someone with whom you agree in large degree. You agree about especially the main things of life, you know, what you're going to do with your family and your church and money and lifestyle. These are all things that you ought to agree with in large degree. Sometimes people say, well, opposites attract. And I'm attracted to this girl because she's so different than I am. Well, there can be an attraction between opposites, but after a few years, those opposites become annoying. Now you're married to somebody who you disagree with about a lot of things, and that becomes a source of friction. So you really don't want somebody, even if you find them attractive, you find this girl attractive, if she has different ideas, different commitments, different standards than you do, there's going to be either a major adjustment or there's just going to be continuing friction. So you have to be very careful about that. Don't think that you can change the other person. I think sometimes people go into marriage thinking, well, we'll get married, everything will be fine, and this person has some qualities that I don't like, but I can change that. Well, don't try to change the other person. It usually doesn't work out. Where do you find the virtuous woman? Where do you find this kind of girl? You're looking for a girl to marry. Well, where do you find her? Well, of course, you can find her in church. There are several examples now in our church of people who have found their mate within the confines or within the relationships at church. That often is a good thing. Christian college is a good place to find. I didn't find my wife there, but a lot of people find their spouses at Bible school or Christian college. You can have family recommendations or friends who recommend somebody. That's how I found my wife, or she found me, or however it worked out. We went through some recommendations of family and friends. Today there are dating apps. If you are in the market for somebody, you're looking for a marriage partner, well, you might need to extend your field of view a little bit. And so there are ways to make connections that are unusual these days. One of the great dangers for Christian men is the temptation to compromise. Especially when you get to a certain age, you really want to be married, you want to be a father, and the right girl is just not coming along. So what do you do? Well, so-and-so, Sally, down the road is kind of interested, and she would be willing to date me, and I can't find anybody else, and so I guess I'll just go with her. Well, is she a virtuous woman? Not so much. Is she a Christian? It's doubtful. But there's nobody else on the scene, nobody else on the radar, so what am I going to do? Well, I'm just going to compromise my values and my commitments and marry this girl who I know has serious problems, but what am I going to do? I want to get married. That is a recipe for disaster, long-term unhappiness and dissatisfaction. So you want to try to find a godly woman who will be a good wife and a mother, and you can't compromise on those values. Don't settle for a girl who is available but is not the right kind of person. We should also be aware that many women today have significant baggage, if you know what I mean. I'm not talking about physical features. I'm talking about experiences, problems, issues. And it seems like the older you get in life, the more probable it will be if you're trying to find somebody that they've had significant problems. Maybe it's been other relationships, maybe it's been children, maybe it's been mental issues. I mean, there are lots of things that can really provide problems and difficulties as you go on in life. And so it's wise to try to find the proper woman who's not going to have all this extra junk along with her in her life. On the other hand, you have to be realistic You know, there's no perfect woman. As I said, if the perfect woman came along, well, if the perfect woman came along, she probably would not be interested in you, all right? Most of us who are average are going to find an average girl. If you're a little above average, maybe you'll find a little above average girl. If you're very fortunate and very blessed of the Lord, maybe you'll marry a girl who's a lot better than you are. But if you're not Prince Charming, you're probably not going to marry Cinderella. So we have to be realistic. Although we have high standards and we want to find the virtuous woman, we can't be unrealistic and look for the so-called perfect woman, because the perfect woman is not out there, probably. And if she were, she probably wouldn't want to marry you. So we have to be realistic and recognize that nobody's perfect. Hopefully you can find somebody like yourself on about the same level, but hopefully somebody also who can be suitable for you. So if your intent is to get married, you have to be realistic and reasonable. You don't want to compromise on your standards, but you have to be realistic in your expectations. So you found the girl finally, you've convinced her to marry you somehow, and now what do? Of course, you have children. Once you get married, you have children. Fathers, by definition, have children. I mean, that's what makes you a father, is that you have children. So the assumption is that you will have children. When you get married, you should avoid the idea that we're just going to get married and not have children. The Bible tells us that children are an heritage of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is his reward. Happy is the man that has his quiver full of them. Modern couples today, unchristian, non-Christian couples, often get married, and they don't want children because children are difficult. Children are expensive. Children are inconvenient. Children are messy. Well, that's not a Christian viewpoint. Christians should see children as a great privilege and a stewardship. Malachi 2:15, God seeks godly offspring. Now we know that children are messy and difficult and expensive and inconvenient in many respects. But I'm convinced that many of the problems that people have with their children is not as much due to the bad children as it is to bad or weak parenting. I think parenting skills go a long way in dealing with children. And if you follow biblical guidelines on parenting, that solves a lot of your problems with the child or with your children. People complain and they have real problems with their children, but if they would follow biblical principles on child rearing, they would find it much easier. And we know that in the providence of God, some people can't have children. My suggestion then is adoption. If you are still pursuing children and you can't have them naturally, well, then adopt. There are other means of doing it, but I really think that adoption is probably the best way to go if you can't have them naturally. So once you get married in the providence of God, you have children, and that's what makes you a father. And then the responsibility, once you have the children, the fun really begins, because then you have to raise your children properly. Fathers in particular have a big set of responsibilities when it comes to the children. We all know what these are. Fathers in particular have to provide for their children. They provide for their wife and their children in the biblical model. And so fathers have to be able to do that. And if you can't, then you're probably not ready to be married and have children. You have to provide for the spiritual needs of your children. Deuteronomy 6, these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to thy children. This morning early we read Psalm 78:5. He established the testimony in Jacob, appointed a law in Israel. He commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children. So it is the responsibility of the fathers as the head of the household to make sure that the word of God and the faith is taught to the next generation. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way that he should go. When he's old, he will not depart from it. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. So fathers, we know, are ultimately responsible for the spiritual quality of their household. Obviously, mothers have a lot to do with that as well, but ultimately speaking, God gives that responsibility to fathers. They're obligated to train up their children to behave properly and discipline them when they need it, when they misbehave. And as I was thinking of parental discipline, a few basic ideas, a few pieces of advice regarding discipline came to mind. First of all, be consistent. Set the rules and ensure that the children follow the rules. Don't make empty threats. Punish disobedience quickly and consistently. Be the authority. Tell the child what to do and insist that the child obeys. And if the child fails to obey, there should be quick consequences, punishment for disobedience. Our neighbor, we've got a neighbor couple, and they have a child who's 5 years old, something like that, and he often comes over to our place and plays around. And his mother comes and calls him or tells him what to do, and he consistently ignores her. She'll say, come on, I won't name his name, but come on, little boy, come home, we need to go do this, come on, it's time to do this. And he just ignores her, ignores her, ignores her. Finally, after 5 or 6 or 10 times, finally he maybe will start going and doing. And what is the consequence for that? As far as what we can see, nothing. No consequences for repeated, stubborn disobedience. I think any Christian parent would not stand for stubborn, repeated disobedience. And you might think, well, it's just a little child. He doesn't know any better. That's one of the parental guidelines for biblical parenting, is you don't allow your child to disrespect you like that. Children are to respect, to honor their parents, and if they fail to do so, then the parent has to do something about it. So, you know, the parent has to set the rules, insist that the children obey the rules, and if they don't obey the rules, there's going to be consequences, suitable consequences, but still you can't put up with that kind of stubborn disobedience. One of my pet peeves is that parents ask their little children if it's okay to do certain things. Johnny, would you like to eat this? Would you like to wake up now? Would you like to go to bed now? Would you please eat your vegetables? Would you please do this? And my opinion is you tell the child what to do, and you don't put the responsibility on the little child. I'm talking about little toddlers and up to about 5 or 6 years old. You don't put the responsibility on them to make the decision if they're going to do something. You tell them what to do, you expect them to obey, and if they fail to obey, you punish them in a certain, you know, what would be suitable along with their disobedience. And there are so many children. This, whenever I see my nephew and his family, he's constantly coaxing his child. Won't you please do this for me? Would you please eat your vegetables for me? Wouldn't you like to do this? Is it okay if we do this? Can we do this now? It's as much as I can do to bite my tongue and just not tell him. Tell the child what to do, insist that he obeys, and if he doesn't obey, punish him. That's the key to successful parenting, at least in that aspect of discipline. So many people today try to coax their child and persuade their child and beg their child, and what they're doing is they're making the child the leader. They're giving the authority to the child, and then the parents just bend to whatever the child wants to do. And I would suggest that that is wrong parenting. Tell the child what to do. You can praise him when he obeys, and you can punish him when he disobeys. I think that is, it's fairly simple in theory. It may not be easy in practice, but I think that is good parenting. 1 Samuel 3:13. This is the prophet speaking to Eli. I've told Eli that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows, because his sons made them vile, and he did not restrain them. One of the main responsibilities of a Christian father is to restrain their children. And that's part of the discipline process as well. Restrain that child, prevent that child from misbehaving. And there are various ways to go about doing that. Don't allow the child to become the center of the family. Certain families, I think, are children run. They're focused so centrally on the children and what the children want. When biblically, the focus of the family ought to be the parent, the parents, the husband and wife. That's the center of the family, is the husband and wife, not the children. The children are obviously very important, but they should not run the family. They're not the authority. And so these are, I think, just things that come to mind in my mind as I survey the landscape and I see some of the problems that parents are having with their children. And some of that is just, I think, poor parenting skills. I think part of it is not applying biblical principles to the situation. Of course, they have to provide for the education of the child. Education is a major responsibility. And I would encourage you, I would urge you to avoid the public schools. If you can at all avoid them as you bring up your children, as you send your children to school, or as you provide education, avoid the public schools. I think the public schools are a disaster both educationally and morally these days. And so there may be some good public schools somewhere, but for the most part, generally speaking, public schools are awful. And then prepare the child for adulthood. That ought to be the parents' consideration as they're raising this child in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, so that when the child comes to adulthood, he's ready to go off. He's ready to fledge the nest. He's ready to go out and be an adult. And obviously the parents want to provide everything needed for that child to go out there and assume adult responsibilities. And then finally, enjoy family life. Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of thine house, thy children like olive plants around about thy table. That again is the ancient Near East picture of prosperity and happiness. A father with his wife sitting around a table with her kids around them enjoying a meal together. And that really is, I think, the biblical pattern. That's the biblical picture that we ought to have in mind. Today, culture is saying family can be whatever you want it to be. And I'm suggesting, biblically speaking, this is the ideal pattern. And this is the one that we ought to be committed to and follow. Most people, I think, want a happy family life. I think we naturally seek the blessings of family and home. Most of us enjoy, hopefully we enjoy our families, we enjoy home life. Some of us are home bodies. We just like being home with our children around us, with our things around us. And that is a wonderful ideal. If you have a happy family life, you should count your blessings. If you picture yourself, your husband and wife, the family around the table, enjoying a family meal together, some of us will enjoy that later today. Well, if that's your experience, praise the Lord, because there are many families today who don't have anything near a happy family life. Their family is a source of great problems and friction and hostility. And so if you have that family life, count your blessings. As I said, some men will not have that kind of a life. They don't want to get married. They don't want to have children. They could not see themselves. Some people are simply not cut out to be fathers. That's certainly true. God has something else for single men. Single men can do great things. Paul, at least for much of his life, was single. Of course, Jesus was single. So Jesus, Paul, the Bible, Christianity has a place for single people to do great things, and that's not a problem. But of course, today we're talking about Father's Day, so we want to celebrate the ideal, the common, the normal pattern that we find in the Bible, the husband and the wife enjoying life with their children. And for the majority of us, for the majority of people today, hopefully for the majority of Christians, that's what they'll experience, that kind of family life. That ought to be the center. It usually is the center of happiness and fulfillment for us. Proverbs 5:18, let thy fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Ecclesiastes 9:9, live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of thy life, for that is thy portion in this life and thy labor which thou takest under the sun. That's what life is all about. That's where we find enjoyment and happiness, is with our family. So on Father's Day, we want to encourage fathers and potential fathers to retain, to be committed to follow, to adopt the biblical worldview on fatherhood. If you follow God's pattern in this area, it's very likely that you can enjoy life and family life and your children. If you're a prospective father, there are several young men here this morning who could be and probably will be fathers within the next 5 to 10 years. Well, fatherhood is a wonderful thing, and we should be prepared for it. You can prepare yourself for that eventuality. If you think that you'll be married at some point in your life, well, work on making yourself marriageable. Work on being the kind of virtuous man that a virtuous woman would be interested in. You can think about Proverbs 31, what would a virtuous woman want? That's what I'm going to try to be. I'm going to try to be the type of man that a virtuous one would be interested in. If you're already a father, work on fulfilling your biblical responsibilities. Perhaps the most important thing you can do is provide a good example for your children to follow. They're going to follow somebody, and you need to be the leader. You need to be setting that example. Set that example in love and in kindness and maturity for your family. Love your wife and your children. In fact, perhaps one of the best things that you can do for your children is to love your wife. Have a strong, stable, marital relationship for the parents. That gives the children stability and it helps them to mature in the Lord. Well, as Joshua said, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That, I think, is the key to a happy family, is when the father sets the tone and says, as for my house, we will serve the Lord. Put God first, serve him, and trust him with the outcome. And so I hope that all fathers can live joyfully with a wife of their youth, enjoy their children, and enjoy their fatherhood and their family today. Well, let's close in prayer.